The following is a Reels Channel and Podcast One production. Available on Apple Podcasts and PodcastOne.com.
This program contains graphic violence and sexual situations. Viewer discretion is advised.
A 22-year-old New Hampshire school district employee comes home to find her condominium ransacked and her husband dead from a gunshot to the head. At first, it looks like a burglary gone bad, but police soon learn that this aspiring TV news reporter has a thing for a 16-year-old student.
Billy Flynn is this dull-eyed, cute kid.
A student who would do anything to win her favor.
Flirting with him and flirting with him and flirting with him.
For your eyes only.
From what I know of teenage boys, that's a pretty big inducement to do a lot of things.
It sounded like you wanted to kill him.
What if I do?
The sexual part between Pam and Billy Flynn is unbelievable.
It always boggled my mind how much power she could have over someone.
What unravels is a shocking story of sex, scandal, jealousy, and cold-blooded murder that will rapidly become national front-page headlines.
It's made for tabloid television. It's got everything.
In the middle of it all, a woman who proclaims her innocence to this very day.
There is no equity in this particular sentence. It's absurd.
If you tell the truth, we're all going to jail. Right.
Meet Pamela Smart.
Being famous for this is so embarrassing.
Just a small-town girl with a dirty little secret until murder made her famous. From inspiring the Hollywood blockbuster film To Die For, starring Nicole Kidman, to spawning numerous television movies, specials, documentaries, and books, the Pamela Smart murder case is one of the most enduring crime sagas in American pop culture. It's a provocative and tragic tale of innocence lost and of the death of a 24-year-old husband who truly could not have imagined why he was being killed, even as it was happening to him. Pamela Wojcis grows up in the upscale community of Windham, New Hampshire.
Senior crime reporter Steve Helling.
In high school, Pamela Smart was the popular cheerleader. And then she goes to Florida State with this idea that I'm going to go into broadcasting. I'm going to be famous on the radio, on TV.
In college, Pam combines her career ambitions as a broadcaster with her passion for heavy metal music, hosting her own radio program called Metal Madness.
Let's kick things off this hour with a little Hot for Teacher.
In 1985, while visiting her family in New Hampshire for the holidays, Pam attends a New Year's Eve party. She locks eyes with an attractive young man named Greg Smart.
Pamela Smart wanted a guy who was edgy, into heavy metal music. She found him in Greg, somebody who she thought was very interesting and she thought was really, really hot.
Former crime reporter Bill Spencer.
To me, Greg Smart always looked like a perfect Malibu, California beach boy. He had this long, curly hair, and he's good-looking, and he plays in a rock band.
They share a passion for heavy metal music and instantly fall head over heels for each other. Speaking from prison, where she maintains her innocence, Pamela recalls her feelings for Greg.
I was totally smitten, totally in love, head over heels. I told my mother I was going to marry him right at the beginning.
After graduation, Greg follows Pamela to Florida State University. By 1989, they are married and move back to New Hampshire.
They're just getting started. They're doing well. They live in a beautiful condominium.
Greg's brother, Dean J. Smart.
My parents were happy. I wasn't. I never really liked her. I thought she was shallow. I thought he could do better.
Greg decides to follow his father's footsteps and become an insurance salesman.
And, you know, as an insurance salesman, you can't go over looking like a rock star.
What the hell did you do to your hair?
I got it cut. What does it look like?
Why?
For my job. God, nice greeting, by the way.
You could have at least asked me first, Greg.
What? It's my hair, Pam. It's not yours.
He cuts his hair, and suddenly the rocker thing is all gone, and she is married to a 1980s yuppie.
But there are other signs of trouble in the young marriage.
Pamela's friend, Eleanor Pam.
Her husband cheated on her, and that threw her completely into depression. And she was very sad and felt very low self-esteem.
When he told me, I was in a devastated space, and instead of looking at it and saying, why did he do this and what was wrong with him that he did this, I totally internalized it and blamed myself that I wasn't good enough and I wasn't this and I wasn't that.
But Pamela finds an escape when she accepts a new job as media coordinator at Winneconnet High School.
I want you all to welcome Mrs. Smart to Winneconnet. In addition to being our school's new media coordinator, she's volunteered to be Project Self-Esteem's discussion leader. Mrs. Smart, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Well, I was born in Florida, but I grew up in Windham. I'm really, really excited to be here. I like movies and music, especially rock music. In fact, I was a DJ in college, and my nickname was the Maiden of Metal.
Oh, I think I'm in love.
It's bothered me over the years because a lot of people would refer to her as the teacher that seduced her student, and Pamela Smart was not a teacher. She was working with kids who were fighting drugs or had been involved in drugs and were trying to get off of them or recovering.
While volunteering for the program, Pam meets 15-year-old student Billy Flynn.
Yeah, I just wanted to get you guys together.
Resembling a young Paul McCartney, Flynn plays guitar, has long hair, sports an earring, and a leather jacket. Unlike Pamela, who comes from an affluent family, Billy lives in the rough town of Seabrook.
You got the nuclear power plant there in Seabrook. It's not a very beautiful place to grow up. I mean, the streets are hard and tough.
In spite of their age differences, Pamela quickly grows close to several of her students.
I'd love to be your intern.
Great. Well, why don't you stop by before you leave today, okay?
Okay. Awesome.
Wow. Someone's got a major crush on you. Can I tell you a secret?
Sure.
Just between me and you?
Yeah, of course.
Former journalist Tammy Plyler.
I always had the impression Cecilia was someone who needed attention, who needed a friend, who needed someone to, you know, kind of be there for her.
15-year-old Cecilia Pierce is also from Seabrook.
Here's this pretty 23-year-old woman giving her attention and being her BFF.
And so she's regressing to being like these 15 and 16-year-olds, and she's interacting with them like she's one of their peers.
There you go. 300 copies.
Aw, Billy, these are great. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Billy.
Yeah?
Do you ever think about me when I'm not around?
Yeah, I do.
Well, I think about you all the time.
Pamela enters a contest to produce a music video to promote an orange juice campaign. She recruits her young friends to help.
She just wants to think of herself as one of the kids. Young, interesting, fun. And these kids were more than happy to be part of this commercial.
Dancing and they're wearing like caveman clothes, I think. I believe Billy Flynn was the photographer and Pamela was one of the stars.
I guarantee you that the high point of Pamela Smart's day was actually putting together this commercial.
Yeah! Let's juice it up, yeah!
Yeah! Oh, okay, that quickly got out of hand. I'm all sticky and hair.
You want to take a break and clean everything up?
Can I take a shower, actually? Do you think your mom would mind?
Shower? No, I don't think so.
Okay. 15-year-olds really don't have a lot of needs. They need food, and then they want sex. He saw Pamela Smart as sex.
Hi.
Hi.
former state prosecutor Paul Maggiotto.
She basically had an affair with this boy. I don't know if she was reliving her youth or I don't know exactly why, but she had an affair with this boy.
Hey.
Hey there, cutie pie.
I got you something.
What is this? A letter. You writing me love letters now?
You can read it later.
I have something for you, too. My wild side. For your eyes only.
Yeah.
Promise?
Yeah, promise.
While her husband Greg is away on a trip with friends, Pam invites Billy and Cecilia over to her condo to watch the movie 9½ Weeks.
So this movie is 9½ Weeks, which is basically like 50 Shades of Grey in 1989. And it stars Kim Basinger and Mickey Rourke, and it's dirty. There's a lot of sex scenes in it. It's certainly not something appropriate to bring a couple of high school kids over and show it to them.
Oh my God, who does that? Ice cubes? Seriously? What? I think it's sexy. What do you think?
I think it's sexy.
Flynn is under the spell of Pamela Smart, and the lengths he will go to please her are without end. New Hampshire school district employee Pamela Smart is in the throes of a romantic relationship with 16-year-old student Billy Flynn.
She can't go back now. This is the point of no return. She's already done something that will destroy her career if it's ever found out. And there's nowhere to go from here except for somewhere bad.
Like it?
Hell yeah.
Too bad you won't enjoy it for long.
The sexual part between Pam and Billy Flynn is unbelievable.
Billy will later testify that this is the night he lost his virginity.
You okay?
Yeah, all right.
He's been with other girls before, right?
Of course.
She and Billy supposedly tried the thing with the ice cubes that they have in the movie.
You know, it's very high school, where Pamela and Billy go upstairs to have sex, and they leave somebody downstairs who's awkward and doesn't know what's going on. It was just a weird, odd situation that Cecilia found herself in.
Billy spots a bruise on Pamela's arm.
What's that?
A gift from Greg.
Pam tells Billy that her husband is abusive, though there is no evidence of this.
He hits you? Pisses me off.
It does? That makes me feel good, Billy.
Why don't you divorce him?
I'd have nothing, and I'd have to go live with my mom.
That's better than being unhappy.
You don't get it, Billy. I'm afraid of him. There's only one way that you and I could be together. Truly together.
What way?
I don't think we should talk about this anymore.
Why not?
It scares me.
The stakes are raising higher and higher, and she's getting closer and closer to it all falling apart.
Pamela and Billy's relationship is getting riskier by the day.
There was testimony about having sex in the car and parking lots. And, you know, this kid, this 16-year-old kid, was, you know, head over heels infatuated with her.
Oh, my God, look what time it is. You, Billy, I don't think we can do this anymore.
Why?
Because it's impossible for me. God, only I didn't have to worry about Greg.
Forget about him, okay? I'm not scared of him.
Well, I am. And if you're not scared of him, then why don't you do something about it?
What do you want me to do?
I don't know. He just can't be around anymore. You know, I need him out of my life.
It sounds like you want me to kill him or something.
Pam, I was kidding. You don't want me to kill him, do you?
What if I do?
Come on.
You'd never do it anyway.
I don't think I could do anything like that.
Then I don't see how we can be together. Do you?
According to Billy, Pamela's message is clear. If you want me, you must kill my husband. But not everyone agrees that this actually happened.
This is a woman who, for my money, should never have spent a single day in prison. And certainly not the rest of her life. Even if you think she was the instigator, they did the murder. They volitionally did the murder.
Hello.
It's me.
Billy, I told you you can't call me here.
I love you.
Then prove it.
In Billy's eyes, Pamela Smart is a damsel in distress. That's really powerful for a kid who thinks maybe I can protect her.
I'll do it.
Billy enlists the help of his friends J.R. Latimer and Pete Randall. According to Billy's testimony, Pamela begins to instruct him on how to carry out the murder.
According to several kids I talked to, they're all saying that she plotted this whole thing out, that she instructed these boys, that she wrote them a script.
She'll pay us like $500 a piece.
Damn.
Well, how do we know she'll pay?
He's got life insurance. Like $140,000.
And we can just take whatever we want?
Yeah, it's supposed to look like a burglary, so the only thing she said was don't hurt the dog.
This is nuts, guys. I mean, we're talking about killing someone we don't even know.
He beats her, man. I've seen the bruises. He's worthless. He didn't deserve to live.
You hear that? He's worthless.
The boys make two attempts on Greg Smart's life. Both attempts fail for various reasons.
And that reminds you that these are kids. These aren't professional assassins. They don't know what they're doing.
Media Center. Billy?
Yeah?
Did you do it? Billy, what happened?
I haven't been able to get a gun yet, and...
Damn it, Billy. This is twice now. You promised.
I know. I'm sorry.
No, sorry's not going to cut it anymore. You know, if you don't want us to be together, then that's fine. It's over. Done.
Pam, please give me another chance.
Having Pamela Smart say, that's it, we're done, that could have been the push that Billy needed to actually go through with the murder.
He's 15 years old, having regular sex with this great woman. Yeah, he's going to want that to continue.
Pam allows Billy one last chance.
According to Billy, Greg is going to be home alone late. She's going to be at a meeting at the school with an ironclad alibi.
I left the back door and the cellar door open. Everything's set. You ready? Hey. It's going to be okay. We're going to be together. Forever.
I can't live without you, Pam.
I could kiss you. Right here. Right now.
Greg's brother Dean still recalls the last time he saw his brother alive.
I remember that day. I was printing out my first appointment that I had that I was going to go do by myself without my father.
Hey, man, can I tell you something?
Yeah.
I'm nervous as hell.
Hey, give me your contract. I'm going to do you a favor, okay?
he came over to my policies and he said to me, I do this to all my policies before I go. I kind of bless them. And he had a lucky paperclip that he kept on his key ring. And he used to run it over his policies before he'd go out on the call for good luck.
That night it happened.
Billy secures a .38 caliber revolver that belongs to JR's father.
It's easy to understand Billy's motivation, but these other boys, they were just doing it out of loyalty to a friend and for $500. Why were they willing to take such a big step for so little money?
Billy and Pete enter the condo. The boys begin to execute the plan. They throw the dog in the basement, laughing as he tumbles down the stairs. They ransack the house to make it look like a burglary.
The boys said that they had been instructed to go into the house, tear everything up, take some of her jewelry, take the stereo speakers apart and stack them by the door. You know, try to make it look like a burglary gone bad.
Pete secures a large knife from the kitchen. And they wait by the front door for Greg to arrive.
Where the hell is he?
I don't know, man. I wish he'd hurry up.
Whoa.
Oh, that's him. That's him.
Unsuspecting Greg Smart has only seconds to live.
Murder Made Me Famous. We'll be back after a word from our sponsors. One third of all murder cases in America remain open.
He had told me that if I opened my eyes, he would slit my throat.
Each one is called a cold case.
The DNA evidence taken from the victim was a match. The linen rapist was at it again.
Based on the hit A&E television program.
A phone call is placed, one that changes a family's life forever.
Cold Case Files, the podcast.
If you could see the fire in his eyes, he screamed at me, "You want it? Get your tape recorder out."
Download new episodes every Tuesday on PodcastOne.com, the Podcast One app, or Apple Podcasts.
This program contains graphic violence and sexual situations. Viewer discretion is advised.
On the night of May 1st, 1990, in Derry, New Hampshire, Greg Smart walks into his condominium, unaware that his wife's teenage lover and his friend are waiting to strike.
Hey, boy.
Okay, what do you want?
Give me your money.
That's fine. Take it.
And your wedding ring.
Okay? No, I can't give you that. My wife would kill me, okay? Please just go, okay?
Billy signals for Pete to slit Greg's throat.
Please just go.
But Pete can't summon the courage.
I can't do it, Billy. I can't.
Knowing he must be the one to act, Billy points the gun at Greg's head.
God, forgive me.
You killed him, Billy. You really did. Come on!
Yeah, let's get the hell out of here, man.
Two teenage boys had just killed a man and then destroyed their own lives in the process.
Shortly afterward, Pam arrives home.
Thank you.
She goes door to door until she finds a neighbor who can help her.
Please help me, my husband.
Okay, calm down. Let's go.
My husband is hurt. He's just laying on the floor. Okay. He's hurt, and I need help. Please help me.
Calm down. Let's go have a look.
No, you can't go over there. Somebody might still be in there.
Okay, come on in. Let's call 911.
Okay.
Greg Smart's brother, Dean, lives just down the street. It is not long before he and his parents receive a horrifying phone call.
I hang up the phone, and I yell down to Mom and Dad, something's up with Greg. And of course, I run down the stairs and look out the window when I see the flashing lights. So I run up to see.
What's going on with my brother?
Why aren't you helping him?
Step over here just a minute.
Why aren't you helping my brother?
I'm sorry. Your brother's deceased.
Where's my son?
Oh, my God. What happened?
My mom really had a big breakdown. Wish she would have stayed back.
Dean and his family join Pam at the neighbor's condo.
Where's Halen? Where's my dog? Can someone see if my dog is okay?
And there was Pam. And she just kept asking repeatedly, where is Halen? And I just kept remembering, thinking to myself, my brother's lying dead. His brain's blown out all over the floor. And you're asking about the dog.
When Pam is questioned by police, she sets off several red flags.
When you went to the door and went inside, can you describe what you saw?
The first thing I saw were the speakers off their stands.
Speakers? You mean you didn't see your husband?
Well, yes. First, I saw the body.
The body? You mean your husband, Greg?
Yes. My husband, Greg. It was a burglary, right? That's what it was?
Can't be sure about that yet.
Well, why not? I thought that's what it looked like.
Mrs. Smart, we would appreciate it if you not talk to the media at all right now. It's important that some of the facts from this case remain confidential. We don't want anything impeding the investigation. Is that okay?
Yeah.
But it isn't long before the local media picks up the story when a slew of reporters attend the service. Also among the friends and family are familiar faces from Winneconnet High School.
Those kids showed up, came to check out their work. Sick.
At the urging of her parents, Pamela retains the services of high-profile attorney Mark Sisti.
We got involved very early on in the case. There was maybe a week between the time of the actual murder and the time we were contacted by Pam.
After 2 weeks, Pamela ignores instructions from detectives when she contacts the local news station in New Hampshire.
I just remember coming into work a few days after the murder, and somebody says, hey, Bill, you got a phone call. It's Pamela Smart. In 30 years in this business, I've never had the victim's wife call me. I'm calling them.
Pamela invites Bill Spencer to her home for an exclusive interview.
She, greeted me at the door in this beautiful electric blue dress. Her hair was perfect, all made up, and very professional. You know, one of the critical things she wanted to make clear in that interview is that her husband was not involved in drugs, that he was not killed by drug dealers, that this was not some kind of a drug deal gone south. At the beginning of that interview, everything seemed fine. And then she just said a few things that were way off, that were completely strange.
If this happened at any point in Greg's life, it wouldn't be fair then. It wouldn't make sense then. It's just an awful tragedy. And now, you know, there's no better time in his life for this to happen.
Basically, she was saying, had this happened later in their marriage, it would have been so much more painful for her. It was an incredibly weird thing to hear.
An anonymous tip to the police claims Cecilia Pierce has been speaking to others about her knowledge of the murder.
Slow down.
The next day, police speak with Cecilia, and soon she is telling investigators everything.
Right from her lips, Billy and Pamela had been having this love affair.
So when he spent the night, where did he stay?
In Pam's room.
Where did Pam stay?
In Pam's room.
Anything happened?
I walked in on him while they were having sex.
Meanwhile, the boys begin to brag about the shooting to friends.
You shot him?
Billy.
Billy.
Man, it was totally wild.
The students had gotten drunk and ran their mouth.
There's a lot of things that happened at the same time. I mean, the big break was the gun.
On June 10th, J.R. Latimy's father brings a .38 caliber revolver to the police and states he believes it may be the murder weapon.
I think they did the right thing, but that had to have taken an enormous toll on them. That was probably what blew the whole case open.
So obviously that started pointing towards the boys.
On June 12, 1990, Billy, Pete, and JR are arrested for the murder of Greg Smart.
Billy Flynn started pointing to Pam Smart, and who else was Pam Smart working with? Well, then it was Cecilia Pierce.
And it's only a matter of time before Pamela Smart's world comes crashing down forever.
I'm not guilty of the crime that I'm in prison for.
After the arrest of Billy Flynn and his friends, the public begins to speculate on the connection between Greg Smart and these high school students.
When the newspaper revealed that the boys who killed Greg Smart went to the same school where Pamela Smart worked, it was like, boom! Then there was some sort of motive.
People really started to raise an eyebrow and say she was involved in this.
The media instantly turns its attention to Pam. Investigators begin to turn up the heat. They ask 16-year-old Cecilia Pierce to meet with Pam in person while wearing a hidden wire.
There was no question in our minds that whoever was her best friend would be wired in this particular investigation, and that happened to be Cecilia Pierce.
I think she was very scared that Pam was going to figure it out. It must have been very difficult for Cecilia to do that because Pam had been her confidant and her friend. Then she had to kind of go in and betray her like this.
Right, I know he is, and that's when I'm going to be in trouble. That's when I'm going to get arrested. But I could probably get out of it because they're not going to have any proof, you know?
Well, first of all, you get off the pay, right?
No.
So he's not going to say that you off the pay. He's going to say you knew about it before it happened, which is the truth.
Right. Well, so then I'll have to say no, I didn't. And they're going to believe me, or they're going to believe J.R.
In recorded conversations with Cecilia, Pamela Smart incriminates herself badly, enough for police to step in and make an arrest.
Well, I think we learned everything we needed to know about Pam in those recorded conversations with Cecilia Pierce.
Hello, Pam.
What? What's going on?
Well, I have some good news and some bad news. The good news is we've solved the murder of your husband. The bad news is you're under arrest. Stand up, please. Put your hands behind your back.
Pamela Smart is arrested for the murder of her husband, Greg Smart. And the case becomes a media sensation.
Well, now we've got a national news story. The pretty young school employee is having sex with a 15-year-old student. She convinces him to kill her husband, who's an upwardly mobile insurance yuppie. It's a perfect story.
Any homicide in New Hampshire gets a lot of attention, but this was extraordinary.
You've got reporters and photographers from all over the world there. I mean, it was just a crush of media every day.
She used to be walked through that courthouse in a gauntlet, surrounded by media, without room to breathe. They'd follow her into bathrooms.
This was the biggest case that had ever happened in that state. It's made for tabloid television. It's a story you can't turn away from. Every detail is just so riveting.
But to Pamela Smart herself, in prison and still maintaining her innocence, the tabloid nature of the case is what dooms her.
This case was tried in a court of public opinion before it was tried in a court of law.
Pamela ultimately admits to the affair with Billy Flynn, but claims she broke it off days before the murder.
They took the approach, okay, we'll admit the affair, but never admit to asking Billy Flynn to kill Greg Smart. And the argument is Billy did this on his own because he loved Pam Smart because of the affair.
Meanwhile, the district attorney makes deals with the boys for reduced sentences in exchange for their testimony against Pamela Smart.
These being 16, 17-year-old kids, I had no problems with offering them a plea to second-degree murder in response for their willingness to testify against Pam Smart.
People say, these boys couldn't possibly have come up with this idea to murder Greg unless some adult was directing them. We know from Columbine that that's not true. We know that young men are capable of evil. And what these guys did was evil.
The gentlemen that were offered wonderful deals by the Attorney General's office were referred to as kids. And the ironic part is that they were actually certified as adults. So the bottom line was that they could plan and that they could execute an individual just like any adult could.
On March 14th, 1991, Pamela Smart's trial begins. The dramatic courtroom footage is watched live by the entire country.
There was gavel-to-gavel coverage, and it preempted the soap operas. But in so many ways, this was more delicious than any soap opera that you could be watching.
Finally, the world is going to hear from Billy Flynn when he takes the stand and testifies against his former lover.
She's going to leave the bulkhead door open so I could get in. Make it look like a robbery.
One of the most powerful scenes in the case is having Billy Flynn kneel down in front of the jury to show us the way Greg Smart was kneeling before he pulled the trigger.
I cocked the hammer back and pointed the gun at his head.
After you pointed the gun at his head, what'd you do?
I said, God forgive me.
And he was crying the whole time, and he seemed like he was genuinely remorseful. It was powerful stuff.
One after the other, the teenagers take the stand and testify against Pamela Smart.
She had asked, whether she should scream, run house to house, or just run in and call the police. How should she react?
She told Bill not to kill Greg in front of the dog because it would traumatize the dog.
She said Greg was a wimp and he wouldn't come in the house if the light was on.
What was the word she used?
A wimp.
As far as we were concerned, they were individuals trying to save their own butts.
These teenagers just were too solid in their stories about what happened. And I don't think that anybody can be coached to that extent to be that perfectly on point.
The most damning evidence that was presented, though, didn't come from any of these boys. It came from Pamela Smart's own mouth.
These tapes showed Pam Smart talking about the planning and the murder of her husband.
Obviously, I knew about it beforehand, and if I get their minds and they find out about it after, I'm going to get in trouble.
Well, if you knew about it beforehand,
you didn't know about it
beforehand. Well, I did know about it beforehand. Yes, but if you say that, you're going
to
get in trouble.
He was basically trying to convince Cecilia Pierce not to go to the police, to keep quiet, and saying if everybody else keeps quiet, we'll be fine.
Obviously, the words on those tapes did her no favor.
After several days and numerous witnesses, Pamela Smart finally takes the stand.
When she got up and testified, she was composed the whole time. I don't recall her crying, and I think if she had, it would have seemed very forced because the whole time she was so composed.
Everyone was screaming, how come no one's doing anything? And a policeman came down the stairs and he said, because he's dead.
People react differently to stress, so I think headlines saying she was an ice princess were maybe a little unfair. I think the public really liked to not like her.
With serious incriminating evidence and popular opinion swayed against her, Pamela Smart's defense attorneys fight an uphill battle to prove her innocence.
She had nothing to do with buying bullets, obtaining a firearm, having a young man get on his knees, coolly, coldly, and with calculation, execute him and conspire to cover it up. She didn't do any of that. She went to a meeting and went home and saw her husband dead. That's what she did.
On March 22nd, 1991, after a 14-day trial, the jury comes back with a verdict.
How say you? Is the defendant guilty or not guilty of the offense charge?
Guilty.
Pamela Smart is found guilty of being an accomplice to first-degree murder, conspiracy to commit murder, and witness tampering.
With no smoking gun, people took all these little pieces and put them together and saw a narrative that said, she's guilty. And I think the affair made her look guilty in and of itself.
But it is her sentence that will be the subject of controversy for the next 25 years.
I was in that courtroom, and the judge said the most chilling words I've ever heard in my career.
March 22, 1991, Pamela Smart is convicted of being an accomplice to first-degree murder, conspiracy to commit murder, and witness tampering.
I was in that courtroom, and I think the most chilling words I've ever heard in my career were when the judge said,
I am required and do hereby sentence you to the New Hampshire State Prison for Women for the remainder of your life without the possibility of parole.
It was just searing.
The sentence of life in prison without parole is the worst possible outcome for Pamela Smart.
Meanwhile, Billy Flynn, Pete Randall, and J.R. Latimy are all given sentences allowing for parole.
You have to ask yourself, for someone who didn't pull the trigger, should she be in prison for longer than the boys? Yes, they were young, but did they know wrong from right? They probably knew you don't shoot people. So I think the question is whether she should have got the sentence she got.
But it isn't long before Hollywood cashes in on the sensational story. CBS produces the two-hour TV movie Murder in New Hampshire, and Nicole Kidman wins a Golden Globe for her starring role in To Die For.
You're not anybody in America unless you're on TV. On TV is where we learn about who we really are.
It was embarrassing. I mean, she played me as like a complete airhead. I'm not that person, so it's hard because I'm constantly hated for being something. I'd probably hate myself if I didn't know myself either, based on what they say. I mean, you're talking about being famous for this. This is so embarrassing.
Pamela Smart still maintains her innocence, claiming the media attention has hurt her chances to appeal her sentence.
When people see you on TV or see a show, they think they know everything about your life, or they think that every single thing that they read or see is true. So those things don't help me. They hurt me.
Being a celebrity inmate has not been easy for Pamela Smart.
They would take people on tours past her cage, as she put it. She felt like a monkey in a zoo, to quote her.
Her time in the prison has not been kind to her. She's been assaulted. Point that her face has been broken up and operated on. She's been sexually assaulted by the correctional officers that were there to protect her, and she was raped.
In June of 2015, Billy Flynn appears in front of the parole board pleading for an early release. Billy is granted parole, and within months, all of the boys involved in the murder of Greg Smart are released from jail. Pamela Smart, on the other hand, sits in prison, having lost all appeals.
I don't think it's fair, considering the fact that the person who murdered my husband has been released from prison and is free.
As the years have gone by, as the kids were getting out, I was hearing more of, why are they getting out? Billy Flynn pulled the trigger. How come he got out of jail and she can't?
They've had a much easier ride in every possible way than she ever did. And they have freedom now.
And she is doomed to a life behind bars. There is no equity in this particular sentence. It's absurd.
Is that fair? What's fair? What's fair to Greg Smart? None of this is fair.
If she did what they say she did, it's enough. If she didn't do what they say she did, it's enough. Either way you look at the coin, it's enough.
I thought, she's spent so much time behind prison already. Hasn't she been punished enough? And then I swing back to the other side and I say, if it wasn't for this crazy plan that she hatched, Greg would still be here. And then I go a different direction. I think, those blasted kids. Why didn't they just tell her to go to hell? Why didn't they go straight to the police and tell them everything, and Greg would be alive?
We'll reconsider her sentence when she considers her own guilt. She maintains her innocence, great. She can maintain herself right in the Bedford State Prison in New York for the rest of her life.
Yet often overlooked is Greg Smart himself, an innocent victim whose life was cut way too short.
Anybody who can kill their spouse like that, I mean, why couldn't she get a divorce? Because she didn't want to be a divorcee at 22, 23 years old, who probably was going to be found out she was having an affair with the kid at the high school where she worked. Oh my God, how terrible that would have looked for her. So rather have to deal with that and deal with her family and deal with Greg's family and all that other fallout yeah, killing him was, in her mind, easier. To me, that's sick.
What did you gain by it all? Even if she would have got away with it, and would have never ended up in jail. How could Billy and the other kids even live with themselves? Things could have been so different.
That concludes this episode of Murder Made Me Famous. Don't forget to go to Reels.com, that's R-E-E-L-Z.com, for clips, extras, and more. And check out new episodes every Saturday on the Reels channel. Don't forget to subscribe on PodcastOne.com, the Podcast One app, and Apple Podcasts.
Have you checked out The Big Podcast with Shaq here at Podcast One? Yeah, we talk basketball, but we're a lot more than just sports.
I met this fabulous lady. She's had to be in her 70s, knew everything about me, knew everything about sports. And the last thing she says, I love your podcast. And
wow.
I
said, "Thank you very much."
But I hate that John Kincaid.
Oh, no. That's terrible. Listen free to The Big Podcast with Shaq exclusively on Apple Podcasts, PodcastOne.com, and the Podcast One app. If you love the show, share it with a friend and leave us a rating and review.
You know that's the sound of another sale on your online Shopify store. But did you know Shopify powers selling in person too? That's right. Shopify is the sound of selling everywhere. Online, in-store, on social media, and beyond. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. Connect with customers in-line and online. Do retail right with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/truecrime.